I look at our order of service, and I always remember the words, seek, love, and serve boldly. When I was 18, I raised my right hand in the Tecumseh Court in Annapolis and said, I will protect and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and the rest of the oath of office. And I was seeking something. And I found something I loved, and I did it for 33 years. Somebody called it service. I never thought I was serving the country. I thought it was an honor and a privilege to do so. But I learned two things. Well, I learned many things, but the two I want to bring out today. Many who don't serve watch the movies of the military and think that we are, who do serve, are a rigid band of folks who are committed to techniques, tactics, procedures, a checklist, a rigid adherence to how to get the job done to ensure safety and success of mission. And that's true. That's true. You can't shoot down a ballistic missile flying at Mach 12 in the exosphere without a little bit of procedure. You can't operate a bunch of super hornets off the flight of an aircraft carrier in the Arabian Gulf without some procedures. You know, surfacing a submarine in the ice caps of the Arctic, you know, 10,000 tub submarine through ice procedures. True. Those tenets are what give us many successes. But the real thing I learned over those 33 years was the fundamental reason for military success is faith. It's faith in one another to do the job assigned, no matter how great or small. This faith forms teams, much like we have teams right here in this room that go out and try to help people. But these teams form that group that can do those procedures, that faith that both the strong and the weak will flourish and succeed. If you look at your order of service, you'll see a picture that will harken your memory back to the Tom Hanks film Saving Private Ryan, the beaches of Normandy in June of 1944. Those men weren't jumping off a Mike boat to go attack a protected beachfront because of a procedure. They believed in our country and had faith in our country. They believed in one another and had faith in one another. And without this belief and this faith in a greater good that was worth dying for, it wasn't worth doing. Many will call that service, but I call it faith. One of the reasons I'm passionate about you is our belief in the faith of people, the faith of helping, supporting good, building teams that want to make the world better. I'm a proud veteran because I help contribute to the safety of our citizens in trying times. I'm proud to be a member of UU because we seek to improve the lives of all in these same trying times. Thank you.
Thank you. Amen. Thank you so much, Bob. I always appreciate hearing you speak. And I really appreciate what you shared this morning, because what I have been sitting with is, where is my faith? Where is my faith? And I find when I look out and I see all of you that I do have faith in you. I have faith in this congregation, and I have faith in our nation. And our veterans teach me a lot about why to have faith and how to have faith. My mom, when she remembers our veterans, she goes first to the veterans of World War II. My mother is Jewish. She remembers that we were slow in assuming the fight. That's our politicians, not our soldiers. And she also remembers the boats of refugees that were turned from safe harbor, sent back to wear gold stars. And she also remembers that when our soldiers were finally called to fight, to defend, to release people from horrors, their eyes, our soldiers' eyes, met those horrors first. Their arms held these people first. Their love released them from chains. And that is the way with war. The eyes, the bodies of our soldiers, they meet these horrors first. They know them to be true. And then they and we must work so that they never happen again. I should say to the veterans here that I do not know directly about war or service in a military sense, which is why it is so important that we also have veterans speak on Veterans Day. But I am a listener, and I have been privileged to hear about many of your experiences, what you were able and willing to tell, because I know it's tough. The flag that I have in my office was presented to me by a soldier medic who flew rescue missions in Afghanistan. And what I hear when I listen is a mingling of raw facts, those important procedures that you have to learn to do well, with a whole lot of struggle and a deep and abiding love. And I also hear about that ceremony, the way that you have to march and step, the respect to your superiors. That's something we could work on here, huh? And the respect to the code of conduct, how you conduct. I've learned something about ceremony in the years that I've been leading congregations. A worship ceremony can either be meaningful or hollow. It could be full of life or it can be empty. A meaningful worship ceremony so often begins, if it is going to be meaningful, with lamentation. It starts with the pain. It names the difficult and brings us slowly but surely to a promise, to a resolve, to a way forward. This is not a performance. This is life. And this is the way that we are sustained. We need to remember how hungry we are before we bring the food to our mouths. Our veterans know that ceremony is nothing without lamentation. The ceremony that our service members engage, the way that you march, the way you show your respect. Kevin Manuel Scott always has the shiniest shoes. Have you noticed that? He's a veteran, a part of our community. It's a ceremony for him to shine his shoes and to remember to make them spot clean. All of that ceremony is nothing without the truth of your calling, that many die for the sake of equality, of liberation, of freedom. A few nights ago, I was part of a non-military ceremony, but it was at the Civil War Memorial in Fairfax. Why the Civil War Memorial? We were there for a post-election call to healing. And the Civil War Memorial is a remembrance of our nation's deepest lamentation, that we were once split brothers against brothers, north against south, and that we were once slave owners. A nation that enshrined in its constitution the profound bigotry of slavery. Some came to the remembrance in tears, and some came feeling joy. It was all about being there together. We began with a shared lamentation, lamenting the language that was used in the campaign that helped to split us as a nation. We considered that map of blue and red, carving out whole populations in opposition to one another. And we asked, do I even know my neighbor? Do I know the pain that touches him or her? When you veterans fight alongside your brother, your sister, soldiers, veterans, you work to defend their life with your own. You put your life in the way of the harm that is meant them. I believe what I hear in that is a love with a passion and a commitment that does not balk, and it would not balk if you were different than your brother or your sister. Your lives are literally wrapped up in that single garment of destiny. This should be true for all of us. Because when we deny one another, we lose ourselves. When we deny one another, we lose ourselves. A person is a person, not in spite of, but because of the relationship they have with other people. This is Ubuntu. Maybe you've heard this, the South African humanist philosophy, which literally means, I am because you are. I am because you are. My life is wrapped up in your lives, Americans. In Matthew and the Christian scriptures, I find one of the most powerful testimonies of this same humanism. Jesus is said to have taught that there will come a time when we will be asked, what did we do for the least of these? What did we do for the most vulnerable, the ones at the margins, the broken bodies in concentration camps, the Afghani and Iraqi bodies imprisoned, beaten, used for ISIS's gain? And what did we do for the Muslim Americans in hijab, taunted by bigots, and the women and the men who have transitioned and feel wholly at risk, the gay couples, the lesbian couples who have finally won the right to marry, the queer youth trying to understand their place, rejected by their neighbors, the non-white citizens who daily have to fight to prove that they are America, and the poor white family in the West Virginia town left behind by industry, with a home underwater and three mouths to feed. These lives, and so many more. There is a reason that I equate all of these lives, because they're all lives. Those who are veterans have fought for, and those who are soldiers will fight for, and those that we must all fight for. I don't think we will be, or we will only be asked one day, what did we do for the least of these? I think we are asked this every moment of every day, and I pray that I can answer that I fought and I will fight and I will not back down. And so Jesus responds, whatever you did to the least of these, you did it unto me. And least is not least meaningful, least necessary, least is least visible, least powerful, most vulnerable, most afraid. We work very well, I believe, in this congregation to cross the partisan divide. And days like this, they are a test of it. Weeks like this, they are a test of it. Some won, some lost. How do we meet one another in the middle with love? I am because you are. And I ask, when will a voice rise up strong enough to love all without denigrating one? That's my lamentation. That so often, we only raise up a voice for some, no matter what partisan side we're on. And this is my resolve, to keep working against partisan division by speaking the brokenness in both approaches, while standing with the least of these by listening for all of their pain and not denying any of it. That's the key. There are times I want to deny another person's pain because admitting it means I might be implicated. I might be accountable. One of the things that our soldiers, I believe, know better than anyone is that defeat is for the valiant. Only then, says the author Paulo Coelho, how do you say that name? Paulo Coelho? Thank you, my Spanish speakers. Only then will we know the honor of losing as well as the profound joy of succeeding. I'm not here to tell you, he continues, that defeat is a part of life. We all know that. But rather that only the defeated know love, because it is in the realm of love that we fight our battles and generally lose. I am here to tell you that there are people who have never been defeated. They are the ones who never fought. Amen.
Having me. First off, it's an honor to be here. Thank you for gathering together to support a great cause and helping bring peace to our veterans. I want to share to you about what our mission is at Boulder Crest Retreat. So for the last 16 years, we've had an all-volunteer force. That means people willingly raised their hand to go fight, knowing that they were going to go fight in a conflict. From that, you stemmed what is now considered a disorder of post-traumatic stress disorder. And I'll get into that a little bit later. But first, you know, it's this idea that when we come home from combat, that we're not able to fit back in. We're not able to find a home. We're not able to belong anymore. We're missing out on things that we're known. And what we've discovered at the Boulder Crest Retreat is that, I think it's Thucydides that said, he who is best is he who has been schooled in the severest school, combat. All right, combat veterans have the capability, as he was talking about earlier, combat veterans have the drive, they have the mission, they have the understanding, the discipline, the integrity, and the honor to actually come forth and be great leaders in a nation that really needs great leadership right now. Mm-hmm. The problem is most of us are lost when we come back home. I know for me, I spent 40 months in combat, and when I came home from combat, from intense fighting, I should say, I was lost. I was good at one thing. I was good at pulling a trigger. I was good at protecting my brothers on the left and my right, and I was really, really good at protecting and oppressing, or freeing the oppressed, if you will. Mm. When I came back, I was injured. I was in the hospital for a year and a half, and I was no longer allowed to serve in the capacity that I was comfortable with, that I was good at. I was lost. I was told by doctors that I had disorders, I had diseases. Here is this medication, here's that medication. There's nothing we can do for you. You just have to figure this out. And that wasn't good enough for me. And it didn't. It was about 2 years of this routine. The medication stopped working. I became darker. I became more depressed. So I started self-medicating. And that's what a lot of our veterans are finding themselves doing these days, is self-medicating. And because of that, our suicide rates have increased from 20 to 35 a day. It's every 75 minutes a veteran will commit suicide at some point somewhere in the nation, possibly two. And at Boulder Crest Retreat, we said, this isn't working. The current treatment is not working. So we received a fund to really start developing a new innovative way to approach PTSD. And what we realized was, if you look at PTSD, the symptoms of PTSD, anxiety, sleep deprivation, anger, depression, fear of failure, sounds like it's a horrible thing. But if you look at combat and how we were trained to be hypervigilant so we could survive anxiety. All right, sleep deprivation, late nights, nighttime operations, getting 2 to 3 hours of sleep a day so we can continue to fight when it best suited our advantages so we could protect our people, all right? So there's that and that. Army side, the mission has to get accomplished. It has to get accomplished or those that we love die, and we can't protect those that we're protecting. PTSD, fear of failure, depression if we don't succeed. So we started realizing that the two, it just doesn't make sense that we were trained this way to survive, and now we're back in the civilian lifestyle, and now we have a disease or we have a disorder because of this. Mm. So what we decided to do at Boulder Crest Retreat was help people grow from that. We have found that we can actually redirect a veteran and say, this is your strength. This is how you were trained. Use these symptoms to your benefit. You can use these benefits to not only serve yourself, but your family and your community. Mm-hmm. I personally came through the PATH program. It's Progressive Alternative Training for Healing Heroes is the name of the program. And I think it was May. From about June 14th of 2014 to about May 7th of 2016, I was in the lowest of the low. Medication stopped working, so gin became my friend. Then a bottle of gin, then 2 bottles of gin a night. And I just kept going down this thing, destroyed my marriage, just bad decisions. I was done. I had given up hope. And a couple of my friends that I served with, they were in the special operations community, said, we have this program we want you to go to. It's called Boulder Crest Retreat, The Warrior Path. I refused it. And I'm like, nah, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm just going to continue going down the path that I'm going. And being who they are, they said, well, if you don't go, you're going to wake up there. And So anybody who's served in the military, you know, when a Green Beret or a Delta guy says, hey, you're going, you go. So I came up from Atlanta, went through the program, and instantly was reminded of what I am capable of, what my brothers are capable of, what my sisters are capable of. We are capable of so much more than receiving a bottle of Xanax or Ambien. We're capable of so much more. We can actually bring peace to this nation because of how we were trained and how we can approach situations. We were trained fight or flight. Unfortunately, we live in a world where sometimes violence will happen, but if the violence is done in a peaceful thing, like in combat, combat can be peaceful. That's the thing that you have to, like, a lot of people don't understand is that when we were in Afghanistan building a school for young children, and then somebody came in right behind us and blew that up because they did not want the further education of their people, we had to protect those children so we could continue their educational and continue their growth. Mm-hmm. All right? It's the same way here. It's the this concept that because we're combat veterans, we're only capable of violence is absolutely absurd. Mm-hmm. We are actually capable of creating peace through not only negotiation, but through also action. You're seeing a lot right now in the nation, a lot of people stepping up to act to create the peace and the division that's been happening. It's acceptable, okay? Mm-hmm. So combat veterans are able and capable of doing this great deed for our nation, and I feel that Boulder Crest Retreat is really redirecting, and it's really helping. Right now we're at 100% success rate with combat veterans. The program's been going on for 3 years. There has been no regression. Obviously some people will always, you know, tend to fall back, but there's always that step forward. I know I've struggled with depression after my program, but I have the training I need to redirect that, push that forward, and continue on my forward path. Since then, my personal relationships have increased. My daughter's back in my life now. I got to move to Virginia, and now I work at this great establishment. And I'm no longer afraid of the demons that were chasing me. Mm-hmm. I am now, I can't remember the exact quote, but the exact quote is something with storms. The demons, or, you know, the storms are coming, but I am the storm. Mm-hmm. The demons are not the storms. I am the storm. I can defeat everything that was defeating me. And in doing so, I can help build our nation and bring our troops up, bring our veterans up, and show that they can also increase peace in this great nation. Boulder Crest Retreat could not happen if it was not for private donation. We are 100% privately funded, and it's communities like this that really drive our purpose forward and help us push through.